Blog Talk Radio.
To another edition here of the Story Blender, of course, hosted by author Stephen James and Jose Castillo, because fans and readers and, of course, authors should all be listening to the show just to know exactly what is the art of storytelling. Tonight's show is going to feature internationally renowned sand storyteller Joe Castillo, and he's having performed all over the world. He's an author and also an artist, of course. He shares a unique blend of inspiration and healing through his powerful sand art presentations. And you are going to hear some incredible stories of him performing in Kenya and Colombia. Now, right before we get to the show, there's a couple things that we have to talk about. We got to do a little paying the bills. And we'd like to let you know that author David Lyons is back with his latest book in the Jock Boucher series, Waters of Oblivion. We at Suspense Magazine here called it a must-read thriller. And to check out all of David's books, just go visit davidlyonsauthor.com. Also, publisher Midnight Inc. is celebrating 10 years by bringing you some very cool new suspense mystery thriller books, because anytime we always get a new Midnight Inc. book to review, we're never disappointed. So make sure you visit midnightincbooks.com and see what you've been missing. Terrific, explosive, devilishly clever, relentless suspense. Those are just a few words said about author Mike Pace in his book. And his latest, One to Go, is available now. So visit MikePaceBooks.com and jump right into the front seat. Awesome, says Brad Thor of writer Mark Cameron. His latest book, Day Zero, has just been released by Kensington Publishing. Also, Horrorbound is what publisher Weekly's calls Candace Fox and her book, Hades. And you can check out KensingtonBooks.com for more on all these books, for a lot more about these books, and, of course, all their titles they got coming out. We love Kensington. Great publisher. They got some really, really fantastic authors. So make sure that you are reading what they have going out. And last here, we have author Lewis Weinberger has just released his latest book, and it is called Into the Devil's Reach. So it stars his main character, Detective Jennifer Mueller. So check out Into the Devil's Reach and see just how far Detective Mueller must go to catch a satanic killer. You can visit Lewis at lewisweinberger.com. That's LewisWeinberger.com for a lot more information. So now that we've gotten that stuff all out of the way, we are so pleased to be able to now bring you the Story Blender with very special guest Joe Castillo. So here's your host, everybody, author Stephen James and Jose Castillo with the Story Blender.
Welcome to the Story Blender. I'm Stephen James.
And I'm Jose Castillo.
And this is where great storytellers share the secrets of great storytelling.
That's right, and we have quite the doozy of the guest today. Of course, I'm Jose Castillo, and I'm a writer, speaker, and consultant, and do a lot of geek translating.
And I write and tell stories, and I've been doing it for about 20 years, and we have a storyteller on today who does storytelling in a unique format.
That's definitely, to say the least. It's a really special guest because this is my dad. I don't know any other way around it. You know, it's not one of those things, Dad, that I said in my life. I was like, you know, one day I'm going to get to interview my dad on a podcast. But it is really cool that that's come around. Joe Castillo is a sand story artist and performer and author and speaker, and has spoken and performed all over the world. And as of recently was a finalist last year on America's Got Talent, and has performed in pretty much every continent except Antarctica, I think. So, Dad, so glad to have you here today.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here, and I never thought that I would be interviewed by my son. So the feeling is mutual, and I'm honored to be here with you guys. And Stephen, a good friend for many, many years, and it's been fun to watch your career kind of blossom and take off. So that's exciting.
Well, we share, you know, we both share a passion for telling great stories and for connecting with listeners. And I still remember, I knew you before you were doing the sand stories. Tell us a little bit about, what is the sand story, sand storyteller? Because when you say that to people, they're like, I have no idea what that's even talking about.
It is a little harder to describe because it's a new art form. I mean, new in the sense that I developed it about 10 years ago. And 10 years is just an infinitesimal amount of time for any kind of art form. And about 7.5, 8 years ago, some of my clips wound up on YouTube, and the phone started ringing. And what it is, it's a light table. I put sand on it. I draw in the sand with my fingers. The camera, I have a camera mounted over the top of the light table, which is then plugged into a digital projector that projects it on a screen so the audience can watch what I'm doing. And I tell stories without any words by just drawing one image and morphing it into the next and the next and the next, culminating with some kind of aha moment at the end.
That's the moment I always look forward to, that aha moment. Yeah, what will happen is we're watching these amazing, you know, pictures shown on the screen, and we think it's one thing, All of a sudden, bam, there's this twist, and what we see is something we never even expected. And I still remember watching America's Got Talent when you did your first show in there, and just the eyes of the judges went crazy. What has happened? And it's almost like a twist in a novel when you have that moment come.
Yeah, it really is, and it's interesting, too, that, you know, the medium of sand story, it's hard to explain. Even, you know, Dad, when you went through and kind of explained what it is, it's hard for people to grasp what it looks like until you actually see it. And I'm sure that's a struggle for you, trying to explain to people what is sand story.
Really, the most interesting time is when I'm going through airport security. I pull out my little Tupperware container that has about 2.5 pounds of sand in it. And what I'm using now is black sand. It's actually volcanic sand from the beaches in Hawaii. And the TSA guy says, okay, what's that stuff? And I try and explain that I'm a sand artist. And finally, I have to pull out my iPhone and play a little video clip so they can see what I'm doing. A lot of times they'll say, oh, I saw you on TV. And so then
Nice. Everything
smooths out, and I don't wind up getting hauled off into the interrogation room.
And meanwhile, it's actually gunpowder.
What I love about the creativity of my dad is that he's actually created a little label that he sticks onto the thing that has a fake barcode and a number and says black sand lava type, you know, 376-29481. And I'm like, he created that label to actually, you know, show people, hey, it really is sand. Of course, you can go to joecastillo.com or sandstory.com and see some of the clips of his work, or just do a search for Sand Story on YouTube or Joe Castillo on YouTube. But tell me a little bit about the storytelling, because you've been telling stories long before you did Sand Story. Some of your other artistic work, the chalk talks and marker drawings and pen and ink drawings that you've done, tell us of some of the different styles of storytelling that you've done over the years.
My art actually started from my parents, my family. My mother was an artist. My father was an artist. My Aunt Carolyn, uncle. I did have an uncle named Artie. So, you know, it just sort of became part of me. But the other side was that my parents were both storytellers as well. And they would tell bedtime stories. They would put on parties where they would write scripts and get neighbors to act out different parts. They did this for Halloween, for Christmas, different celebrations. And so stories were a big part of my life, And so when I combine the two, I begin to realize that the power of story could also be combined with the visual and increasing the impact of it. So I even was drawing my own comic books when I was 9, 10 years old, telling stories with artwork. When I was about 15, I saw the very first chalk artist. And chalk artists are the ones that do very quick pastel drawings on a large easel and often have a black light that at the end they can turn on and something that was pre-drawn all of a sudden appears. And so that's sort of the origin of what I did. But then I continued by telling new stories, kind of epic stories, using chalks, using pastels, using acrylics, magic markers, all kinds of drawings that would then go along with the story to complete the idea.
You know, one of the things with these moments that you've talked about, these aha moments, and also just the unfolding stories that you tell, I know when I write a novel, I never plot out my novels. I don't outline them. I always try to see where it's going to come, and then these twists occur, and I'm like, man, I would have even thought of that. And readers are always like, how come, you know, how'd you come up with this twist? I'm like, well, because I have no idea. So when you create these twists and these moments and these aha things, do you have that in mind beforehand, or do you tool around? Do you play with the sand and sort of see what emerges? Or what's your process there with coming up with those moments?
It's really interesting that you should mention it in just that way, because what little writing I have done, a lot of times the characters just take on a life of their own, and they sort of dictate where they're going to go, and you're just putting it down. And it's very much the same with the sand. I can try, and I often do, storyboards where I just sketch out the ideas that I think will work. But the truth of the matter is that once I get into the sand, it has a personality of its own. It moves in its own way, and it's never the same twice. And so a lot of times I just have to sort of go with the flow. And a perfect part of what goes in my favor anyway is people's imagination. In that when people are watching, the minute they see that I'm drawing something and then morph it into something else, then they're captivated by it and they're starting to guess what comes next. And so a lot of times I will do a performance and have people come up and say, "Oh, I saw you put that Native American Indian in there, and I didn't have Native American." Or, "I saw the Black Hawk helicopter coming in over the mountains, and I had no idea that there was one in there." So the imagination of people helps me out in a lot of the things that I do.
Yeah, and I love that quote from Howard Stern when you shared an image of a man, you know, holding someone else, and he asked who it was, and there was this argument amongst the judges, and so Howard Stern says, you know, "Joe, who was that? What was that guy?" You know, and you just calmly said, "You know what? Sometimes you see what you need to see."
And that's the beauty of storytelling, is that different people will extract from the story different messages. And so you can write it in one way, and somebody else will come along and say, "Wow, that really gripped me in my views of family," or "That really impacted this idea." And so different people are going to see and hear and get different things out of the art and the story.
You know, what's amazing, in some of the stories that you've told with sand art, and again, if people are listening and you've never seen some of the sand art, you need to go online and you need to Google Joe Castillo, sand artist, and watch some of these videos that are posted. But some of these maybe 90 seconds long or 2 minutes long, and people will be in tears by the end of it. How do you do that? How do you pull that off?
I think it's a lot the same way that you tell a story, Stephen, because I think there are general truths that are universal. The love of a mother for a child, romantic love, patriotism for a country, fear. Those emotions that are universal are the ones that kind of things that I start with. And then once you have the theme of the story, that you want to tell a story about a little boy that gets sick and winds up in a hospital, then people are going to identify with that because everybody has had somebody get sick and be in the hospital, or somebody that died, or somebody that was taken away. And those emotions are right under the surface. And if you tap into them, then the impact is already there. And that's kind of the way it works.
Yeah, I agree. And for someone who has watched you, you know, do your artwork my entire life, I am still amazed, and I still get emotionally moved watching it. And I think you're right. There are those pieces that you tap into on the emotional side. Performance art, it's such a unique medium. It's really hard to capture. How do you structure stories differently for something that is here one moment and gone the next?
It's really not much different than life itself, because we are all in flux. We can't freeze any moment in time. And you fall in love with one glance. And you look into the face of the person you love, and that electricity is there. And the first time you touch their hand, you just feel that emotion swell. It can never be duplicated. You can have similar emotions, but that experience, holding the hand of a wife who is dying of cancer, and when she breathes her last breath, there are emotions there that can never be duplicated. And so I think the very same thing is true in storytelling, that if you can swell the story in a way that brings that emotion to the surface, and then you move on, and it's really, it's gone. I mean, you can go back and read the same book or do the same sand story, and it just isn't the same as the very first time that it happened.
You know, that's interesting, because in some of the storytelling seminars I've taught over the years, I sometimes tell people, never tell the same story twice. They always look at me like, what? If I learn a story, I can't ever tell it again? And it's always because the audience is different, because you're different, different place. And a lot of it has to do with just meeting that audience that day in that way. And you can never, recapture that moment, just like you said, again.
You know, I remember this moment, Dad, when we were in Las Vegas, and Dad had been performing with the America's Got Talent Roadshow in Las Vegas. And, I was up on stage after the event, and we're standing there with the light table, and it has the last image on there of the last piece that he's done. And he takes out his little plastic case, sets it down, and takes out a brush, and sweeps up all the sand and puts it back in the box. And that, for me, was a beautiful image of what performance art and this type of storytelling is that it's here one moment and it's gone the next. And that one moment in time will never be the same, no matter how hard you try over and over again to recapture it.
Stephen, I think that's a very profound thing that you say in your seminars about never telling the same story twice, because the minute we solidify something, we fossilize it, it becomes stone, and then it loses its life. So I think you couldn't say it any better than to encourage people to never tell the same story twice.
You know, I'm always interested in origins of how, you know, things got started or how people got into things. And I remember hearing you tell the story one time of how you originally got interested in sand art. And it was kind of serendipitous, wasn't it?
Well, it was. It actually, Jose is kind of the blame for it.
I take full blame.
Yeah. He had sent me a little video clip of a guy in Budapest that was doing a sand piece, and I was really intrigued and captivated by it, but it was this little grainy thing, you know, it was only about 5 minutes long. But I was trying to tell new stories, and I was trying to tell them in new ways. And so the next time I was at the hardware store, I was walking down the aisle where they had bags of sand, and one of the bags had ripped open and spilled out on the floor. It was white sand on a dark concrete floor, and people had scuffed through it. And as an artist, you see images everywhere. So I started dragging my toe through the sand thinking, you know what? I can do something. I can figure out how to do this. Well, there are no instruction books on sand art. There are no videos. At that point, there was nothing on YouTube. And so I dragged this thing home, a sack full of sand and a kitchen light fixture and some table legs, and cobbled it together in my garage. I got a little handy cam, and I duct taped it to a tripod and plugged it into my television set. And sure enough, the images started coming together, and they were very compelling and captivating. And so that's how it got started.
Well, the interesting thing, too, is that this art form and this storytelling style really transcends language and cultural barriers. And, you know, Dad, I know you've had the chance to perform in front of King Abdullah in Saudi Arabia, perform with the president of Colombia in, you know, BBC kids shows and all over the world. And people who don't speak the same language, people who don't share the same cultures, but we all can appreciate good storytelling. Share how Sand Story has kind of transcended those cultural barriers.
That really was a surprise to me. You'd think I would have picked up on it a little earlier, but I'd been performing the Sand Stories for about a year and a half before it dawned on me that there was no translation required. I'd actually been invited to go to a church and do a performance for them, and we did the Sunday morning service, which was fine, but then the afternoon service, they had invited, it was in Detroit, and they had invited Asians and their families, and the husbands were acclimating to the culture fairly well, but the wives were at home, they weren't learning the language, didn't know how to operate an ATM machine, and so they had started this kind of a ministry to the wives, and then invited the husbands and then the families, and so I got in there, and there was 400 Asians from Korea, China, Taiwan. Most of them could speak rudimentary English, but most of them could not speak even rudimentary English. And the minute I started telling these stories in sand, they were just captivated. And so that was kind of the awakening when I realized, man, this is amazing. Here's five or six, seven different language groups, and I'm communicating with all of them. And, of course, one of my favorite stories is when Juan Manuel Santos was running for president of Colombia, and his campaign wanted me to come down and tell the story of Colombia.
That's not daunting.
Yeah. They said, well, what we want you to tell is about the struggles and the revolutionary incursions and the kidnappings and the killings and the FARC and all of that. And then we want you to turn it around and bring in the, you know, the rescuing efforts of Juan Manuel Santos and wind up with the logo of the presidential campaign. So that's what I did. And we put together a soundtrack that had bombs going off and machine guns and helicopters. And here I'm drawing these things and people with blindfolds and barbed wire and stuff. And I was performing this for 35,000 Colombians in the Bogota Coliseum. And they were weeping audibly. And then I transition and I draw this little boy holding a candle and end it with the logo, and the place just went nuts. So, you know, you tell the right story in the right place, and wow, the impact was just something else. And so that was, you know, that was one of those things I'll never forget. One of those
That's amazing, yeah.
Just so powerful.
You know, you've been to, you know, all these different continents all over the world, and impacting people through your stories and through the stories you tell as well as the stories that you draw. And I'm wondering if you have secrets that you've noticed for relating to an audience, or really draw them in and make it, you know, appeal specifically to them. I don't know if it's different for sand or if it's different for speaking and telling stories, but how do you analyze that relationship with the audience?
C.S. Lewis, who is one of my favorite authors, made an interesting statement about art. And when he said art, he was referring to art in general, not just the visual arts. He was referring to journaling, stories, music, etc. And he said that art has the capacity to steal past the watchful dragons. And so people have their defenses up almost everywhere you go. You know, oh, I've heard this before. I've seen this before. I'm bored. I want to go home. I'm hungry. I'm tired. My kid's sitting here screaming. And so their defenses are up. But I think universally around the world, there are the stories that will reach past those watchful dragons. And so I don't think it's any secret that I have. I think anybody that enjoys storytelling successfully, and both you guys I know have, you know, when you're standing before an audience and all of a sudden you sense that you've got them, that your story, whether it be the sand drawing or the words or the inflection of your voice, has just bypassed the static of life and touched their soul. And boy, when you do that, it's a magical, magical moment.
And I'll tell you, the cool thing about Sand Story is that it is still a very new art form. And while people have been drawing in sand for thousands of years, you know, you have really been a front runner on this new, you know, medium of artwork. But it appears to me too that the uniqueness of this performance art is one of those things that helps you get past those dragons to tell those stories. And I know it's been a long journey of, you know, equipment and the technical side and the storytelling side, et cetera. But, you know, what is it like being sort of the torchbearer for a new art form?
I have to admit that it's been sometimes overwhelmingly humbling, because you're right that the fact that it's so new, people are caught unawares. They see me walk on stage, and sometimes I have a 35-foot by 70-foot screen behind me, and so my hands are 14 feet high. And I start drawing. And when they identify, when they realize that I'm telling a story, they are just so taken in. And one of the experiences I had was I did a performance with Mark Anthony and Jennifer Lopez for about 15,000 Latin American fans. And they wanted me to tell this story about Cuba, and it was this heartrending song about a little boy who remembers his grandmother's grave.
Whoa.
And so I'm drawing this little boy and the grave, and he's putting flowers on the grave. Well, you know, anybody that grew up in Cuba and left grandparents behind is going to be grabbed by that. But when I walked off stage, I had to walk past the audience the way they had designed it, and a woman reaches out and grabs my hands and pull me up to the barrier between me and the audience, and she kisses my hands. And she says in Spanish, benditas manos, blessed hands. And I just, you know,
wow.
How do you respond to that? I was embarrassed. I was overwhelmed. I was humbled. It's sometimes a difficult thing.
Yeah, that's a powerful story. And I know that I know that over the years you've, you know, told stories all over the world to all these cultures and all these different people, coming up with unique stories. What's one of the most, besides that one, that was powerful, what's one of the most memorable experiences you've had? Maybe it was a small group, maybe it was a big group, but really seeing the light come on in the eyes of the audience.
That's an easy one to answer, because this was one of those experiences that is also incredibly memorable. I was contacted by a young woman in Nairobi, Kenya, and her husband had just been elected as the mayor or governor of Nairobi City and province. Nairobi last summer was the place where the Westgate Mall massacre took place. The terrorists broke into the mall. There was about 8 or 10 of them. They just lined people up and started shooting them. I think they killed about 80, 85 people. And Kenya has, for the past 10 years, has had this incredible conflict between the two ruling parties, not too similar, I mean, not too different than sometimes here in the United States, but they had not been in the same room together for 10 years, the two political parties. And so largely because of the massacre at the Westgate Mall, they wanted to have a banquet that would bring everybody together. And so President Kenyatta of Kenya asked Evans Kidero, the mayor of Nairobi, to pull off this banquet. And so they had seen my work, and they asked me to come over and, again, to tell the story of Kenya. And they wanted me to include the Westgate Mall massacre.
Wow.
And they were calling it their 9/11.
Wow.
Now, most of these people had never seen sand art. I walk into the room. There's 1,000 dignitaries there from all over Kenya, including the U.S. ambassador and the British ambassador and all of these people. And I start drawing, first of all, the country of Kenya with the lions and the elephants and the giraffes, and then the city of Nairobi growing out of the sand. And then I draw the Westgate Mall, and literally it was as if all of the air had been sucked out of the room, because everybody knew what was coming next. And sure enough, and you hear the gunshots, and there were two iconic images that somebody caught on film. One was of a guy just walking past the mall, happened to be carrying his Glock 9mm gun. He was licensed to carry. He heard the shots. He goes into the mall, and he's trying to rescue people. And there was an American family, a wife and their three little girls, hiding behind one of the kiosks in the mall. And he's holding down the gunman, and the photograph is of this little 4 or 5-year-old girl running across the mall, and him standing there with his gun. and her hair flying and this look of fear on her face. And so here I'm drawing that iconic photo. And, you know, the people were weeping. And so it was one of those moments that was just really, really powerful. And then to end, you know, by bringing the people together and doing a whole series of different faces and then having them all pulled together into the flag of Kenya. So that was quite a moment.
Yeah, that's amazing. Just what you're able to do, that's just the thing that this astonishes me. All over the world, you tell these stories of these countries and these people, and you bring people together through your artwork and through your stories and storytelling that you create. And I know that some of your work has to do with spiritual themes, and it's really hope-based. And I know we've, you know, talked about this before, but that's a huge part of your life, your faith, and it sounds like that just can't help but be a part of everything that you do.
Well, it is. My very first sand story was done when I was pastoring a church, and it was the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ, and it's still the sand story piece that I perform more than any other. Partially because there's a lot of places that request it, but also because it's the story that changed my life. And I remember a fun time performing for a cellular phone company in Italy, in Milan, and there was about 300 salesmen, and it was, you know, strictly a secular event. But they said, do what you want to do. And so I did something about Italy with the Leaning Tower of Pisa and the Venetian boat person and everything. But then I closed with this, the Passion of the Christ. And I thought, you know, Milan, Italy, here's where Da Vinci painted the Last Supper, for crying out loud. You know, this is where they have religious paintings on every church, every fresco, every ceiling, I mean, all over the place. And I thought, surely they'll appreciate this. And they did. And it was a powerful moment to see these guys, you know. And I couldn't speak Italian, but I said, this is sort of my tribute to Leonardo da Vinci, you know. I'm not him, but we'll do something that... that sort of has the same theme, and it certainly went over real well.
You know, what I love about this performance art and sand story is that it is a blend, and here on the Story Blender we love to talk about, you know, how things blend together. And sand story really is a blend of art. It's also a performance art and, again, in-the-moment piece, but there's also the music element and... the music that's part of that. I actually had the opportunity to perform with my dad, with you, in Knoxville at Market Square. We had about 5,000 people, and I got to play music and created some music for some custom pieces. But talk a little bit about the music component and how that blends together with the story to help move the story along and to help bring those emotions to the surface.
Well, Jose, that was a fabulous event. We had a good time doing it. We did. Jose, along with all of his other accomplishments, is also an accomplished percussionist, and he has all these funky little instruments. Everything from this giant djembe, real deep sounds, to these.
Yeah, he wanted to bring them on the show today, but I told him he had to leave those at home.
Well, it was how many years ago was it that we, Stephen James and I, were out telling stories, and I was playing percussion with Stephen on stage,
too.
That. So.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, probably 18 years ago.
Well, the music, obviously, is one of the part of the arts that also... is able to steal past those watchful dragons, and and we are impacted tremendously by music. Music is so powerful, and I have to admit, from the very beginning, I incorporated music with my sand stories because it's so evocative, and it can be so emotional. And for me, anyway, it wound up being way more powerful than just trying to talk or just silence. And so happy music, like we did in Knoxville with the animals and crickets and things crawling around, fear, tension, anguish, all of those things can be woven into music. And Stephen, it would be fabulous if, and maybe this is the next step for electronics here, your next digital book, Stephen, needs to have music that goes along with text. So in other words, when you turn the page, the music flows, and as the tension mounts, you know, figure out a way of getting the music to blend with the words. I think movies are powerful because you've got the visuals, you've got the music, you got the whole package, and you can really create a mood. So maybe we can do that with books as well.
Hey, maybe. Maybe that's what's right around the bend, you know. Well, man, your stories have impacted, you know, millions of people all over the world, and, you know, we're honored that you took some time to be with us today. Take us to your website. Where can people find out when and where you're going to be performing next?
All right. JoeCastillo.com. Is one way to remember it. Another way is just Sand Story, all one word. And if you want to read in more detail some of the adventures that I've had, because I've only gotten a chance to tell you just a smattering of some of the crazy, unusual, thrilling adventures I've had, by all means, my book is available as an ebook, or you can go to sandstorybook.com and pick it up. 12 bucks. It's an easy read, and I know you'll have a good time with it.
Oh, fantastic. That sounds great. Well, for more information about our guests and to check out our other broadcasts, click to thestoryblender.com. We want to thank our guest today, Joe Castillo, and we want to thank you for listening. And we will see next time. We'll be back with international bestselling author David Morrell.
And as we always like to say here at the Story Blender, the art of the story is all in the blend.
See you next time.